This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, allegations of racism at a high school in South Africa are worrying authorities. And Human Rights Watch says the Algerian government should release imprisoned human rights defenders. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A visiting delegation of senior U.S. officials has reiterated Washington's commitment to economic ties in Africa. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The latest visit by U.S. representatives is aimed at signaling the growing commercial ties between the United States and the African continent. Akuna Cook, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, leads the iPower delegation on a two-week tour to Africa. She told journalists this week that President Joe Biden wants to expand economic engagement with Africa.
The Biden-Harris administration has made trade and investment with Africa a huge priority, and this trip is really allowing us to connect with entrepreneurs, investors, and policymakers to talk about how the U.S. government can improve its commercial and economic diplomacy initiatives.
During the tour, which began on February 14th, the U.S. delegation is visiting Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, and Namibia. Speaking to reporters Tuesday in South Africa, the third stop on the trip, Cook gave more details about our mission to promote the U.S.-Africa trade and investment relationship.
In Nigeria and in here in South Africa, we are focusing on the creative industries, digital technologies, climate and health. In Kenya, we were particularly focused on digital technologies and talking to startup founders, investors, to understand how the U.S. government can better support those efforts. And then lastly, in Namibia, we'll be focused on climate technologies, given the potential of Namibia to really drive us into the future on that front.
Leslie Marbury, Acting Chief Operating Officer at Prosper Africa, a U.S.-led initiative to increase trade and investment between the United States and Africa, is among those on the delegation.
It's all about the opportunities that we are seeing in Africa and that we've certainly seen in Nigeria and Kenya and now in South Africa. We are doing four things with Prosper Africa. We're advancing deals, we're promoting opportunities, we're reducing barriers to trade and investment, and we're deepening financial and capital markets.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, says since 2019, the U.S. government has supported African and U.S. businesses and investors in closing agreements on more than $2.8 billion U.S. dollars in new exports and investments. And deals worth more than $10 billion U.S. dollars are in the pipeline. Deputy Assistant Secretary Cook explains a key goal of the deals.
We do a lot of work with governments and the U.S. to ensure that there's a regulatory environment and an enabling environment that is transparent. Our companies are specifically focused on ensuring that there is job creation in terms of their investments. And that's something that the United States does extremely well, ensuring that the investments that are made, whether it be in infrastructure, whether it be in health or climate, comes with an investment in workers here in Africa.
She added that the United States, as a leading source of foreign direct investment into Africa, is stepping up efforts to reduce corruption by helping governments digitize their services. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch issued a press release stating that the Algerian authorities should immediately release human rights defenders, civil society activists, opposition figures, journalists, and all others arbitrarily imprisoned for peacefully exercising their rights to speak and assemble. 3 years after the movement known as the Hirak began its massive weekly peaceful street marches for political reform, the authorities are holding at least 280 activists, many of them associated with Hirak, who are facing or convicted on the basis of vague charges. Some face charges of terrorism based on a definition so broad that it is arbitrary. This number has soared over the past year, while the authorities have also moved against associations and political parties deemed supportive of the Hirag. Reporter Angie Omar spoke to Eric Goldstein, the acting director of MENA program at HRW, on his assessment of charges that Algerian authorities are using against Hirag activists jailed for participating in peaceful activities, calling for freedom and democracy, and reforming the political system in Algeria.
The government of Algeria is using the most vaguely worded charges to crush this peaceful movement. Any kind of criticism of the authorities, of state institutions, calling to demonstrate, bring charges like harming national unity or defaming the president or defaming the judiciary or calling for an unauthorized demonstration, and people will be picked up for these charges and held for months before they're tried. Some of the people have been convicted and sentenced to 2 years, 3 years in prison. So it's a massive crackdown using charges that really shouldn't be on the books because they involve just peaceful association, people's rights to criticize the authorities. And this has been going on now, and it's intensifying in the last year.
On June 2021, President Tebboune amended the penal code by presidential decree, expanding Algeria's already overbroad definition of terrorism in Article 87 to include, quote, to work for or to incite by any means to accede to power or change the system of governance by non-constitutional means, and to harm the integrity of national territory or to incite doing so by any means. What do you make of such tactics?
We've seen such tactics in countries around the world, repressive governments and other governments too, sometimes democratic governments, who use the fear and the specter of terrorism to redefine it in a way as a kind of catch-all to envelop activities that I think the average person would not regard as terrorism. For example, in Algeria, the idea of wanting to change the government, you know, where do you draw the line? But in this case, the government is calling actions like that terrorist, even if there's no, acts of violence involved. And so it's just the latest tool in their arsenal to shut down speech. Yes, the Hirak people, the activists, want to change the government, but through a negotiated transition to a different kind of process for choosing leaders in elections. They were opposed to the election process that took place in 2019. They wanted it different, but they were peaceful in their demands.
Human Rights Watch demanded that the Algerian authorities should immediately release human rights defenders, civil society activists, opposition figures, journalists, and all others arbitrarily imprisoned for peacefully exercising their rights to speak and assemble. What was the response of the Algerian government and members of the Hirak movement?
We haven't received a government response to these claims, and we're not alone in making them. I think the human rights movement in general believes that the vast majority of people associated with Hirak and serving time or awaiting trial in Algeria did nothing but peacefully express their views on the political system and what they'd like to see happen in Algeria, or assemble in demonstrations, or try to meet in the context of political parties or associations. And that there's no reason that a rights-respecting government should keep such people in prison.
The United Nations Human Rights Council appointed independent expert Aliyun Tene in 2018 to assist the Malian government in promoting and protecting human rights. Tene said he noticed some improvements in security during a recent visit from February 8th to the 17th, but he remains concerned. Annie Risenberg gathered additional comments from local activists and human rights officials in this report from Bamako.
During a video press conference Tuesday after his visit, Tien noted an improvement in the security situation in central and northern Mali. He also voiced concern about the withdrawal of international partners from Mali after France announced February 17th that its troops would leave because of tensions with the military government. Tien ended his remarks by calling for more integrated security strategies focused on the protection of civilian populations and their fundamental human rights. The improved security situation coincides with a military offensive in the past few months by the Malian army. Some activists say that the offensive involved arbitrary arrests and disappearances among the Fulanis, an ethnic group that resides mostly in north and central Mali. Fulani say they are often unfairly accused of being jihadists. Ibrahim Diallo was a member of two Fulani cultural organizations, Tabital Pulaku and Pinal. He says that during a recent offensive in Niono in Mali's Segu region, some Fulani youth fled when they saw the army, fearing they could be unfairly targeted. As they fled, Diallo said, they were fired upon. Diallo says that he knows two people who were shot as they fled. He heard that they died, but he has not seen the bodies. Ali Berry is a doctor from the Mopti region in central Mali and a member of a Fulani association. He said from Bamako via a messaging app that the Malian army's successful advances are undeniable, but that actions have negatively impacted the human rights of civilians. Berry says that a few dozen people were arrested Sunday in Niono, and he doesn't know where they are. He says it's unclear whether they are in prison or dead. Agibu Buare is president of the National Commission on Human Rights, a governmental organization that independently investigates human rights abuse accusations in Mali. Buare confirms that the security situation in the center and north of the country has improved, but says that the commission has concerns about human rights abuses during the past few months of ramping up by the Malian army. He says that his group is recording allegations of human rights violations that are attributed to the armed security forces during this period, and that the investigations are continuing in order to establish the facts in a clear way. VOA reached a Malian army spokesman by phone, but he refused to comment on the incidents in Niono or elsewhere in the country. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
In South Africa, allegations of racism at a high school west of Johannesburg are worrying authorities. Black children say their white schoolmates at the school have verbally and physically abused them, with white teachers allegedly ignoring the incidents. The education department says it has reported some of the allegations to police. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The latest incident of racism at Hoër Skool Yanfelian High School in Randfontein was sparked by a circulating video showing fight between white and black learners. Police confirmed that the brawl broke out after a group of white learners confronted some black learners who were playing music, accusing them of making noise. The black students accused their white schoolmates of insulting them with derogatory terms used to refer to black people during apartheid. Some also claim they were assaulted by white students, but say their white teachers allegedly refused to act on their complaints. This learner spoke to journalists when parents of black students protested at the school last week and explains the kind of abuse they receive from their white peers.
I got threatened saying they're going to kill me. I am not safe here anymore at Yanfel Uni. And the school wasn't so. The racism was there, but it wasn't like it is now.
Another student, who also spoke to the media last week, accused white teachers of being biased.
When it was our complaint, they take their sides. Is it fair? Our English teacher told us that black children will work or check us behind the kind of tops. Is it fair? Is it fair?
Parents of the two groups have also joined the fight. A standoff ensued during the protest last week, with some parents exchanging harsh racial words. The exchange also continued on social media, with some black parents accusing their white counterparts of behaving as if South Africa was still under apartheid, where blacks were considered to be inferior. The Department of Education has since intervened to allow classes to continue while the allegations of racism are being investigated. Panyaza Lesufi, the provincial head of education in the Gauteng province, addressed the parents of children at the school.
We will not breed new racists in this school. We'll never tolerate any form of racism, regardless of where it comes from. I was hurt and deeply disappointed that in a meeting that I convened here, parents did exactly what our children did 2 weeks ago.
In recent years, bigotry has emerged in some racially mixed schools in the country. In 2019, a picture taken from a class at Le School Shweza Reneke School caused a national outcry after showing that black learners were sitting on separate tables from their white classmates. Towards the end of 2020, parents of students at Brackenfell High School in Cape Town had to engage on physical fines after only white students were invited to a graduation event. In 2016, black hair became a national talk after female black students at Pretoria High School protested white teachers calling their afro hair exotic, untidy, and unnatural. The school was later forced to change its hair policy. Many observers lament the slow pace of addressing racial conflicts in South Africa decades after the country ended white minority rule. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Fighting has largely died down in Ethiopia's Tigray region after more than a year of conflict between the federal government and Tigrayan rebels. However, clashes continue in the neighboring Afar region, where civilians have formed self-defense militias to respond to Tigrayan rebel attacks. In the town of Samara, the main hospital is overwhelmed with the injured. Vincius Assisi reports from Samara.
Aisha Noor was making breakfast for her husband and 8 children earlier this month when their home in Abala, a town in the Afar region, was hit by incoming fire. The explosives injured 10-year-old Noor Darsa's leg and burned the face of 9-year-old Tahir Darsa, who were sitting on the same bed as their mother in a small room full of others who were injured. Noor was able to get the wounded children to Samara's Dubti Hospital, but the family was separated. She said they are here to save their lives, but the situation for their family is dangerous. They don't know if the family members are alive or not. The hospital was forced to turn its library into a room for injured patients after an increase in fighting quickly put a strain on their capacity, as Dr. Hussein Aden explained.
We had patients who had penetrating abdominal injury and some patients who had a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury because of the bullet, whether it's bullet or whether it's an explosion. And also we've seen kids who sustained burn traumas and who had also amputations, both leg and arm amputations because of the explosion.
72-year-old Fatuma Ibrahim has fractures in both arms and a leg.
They were fleeing the scene while they were fleeing the accident, the war. There was a car accident, so around 6 people died, and those who were fortunate enough to survive, they brought them to the hospital.
But with patients, even in the hospital corridors, it's clear that conditions in the medical facility are poor, with shortage of beds, medical supplies, and water, often forcing them to push back needed surgery. This is the main hospital in this region. There are 150 beds here, but the medical facility currently has around 250 patients. Almost half of them arrived in the previous days. Fighting in the Afar region intensified in January, with Tigrayan rebels launching attacks against this part of the country full of mineral resources. Civilians here complain about lack of government support now that the TPLF has brought the war to some towns in their region. Vinicius Assis for VOA News, Smera, Ethiopia.
A report by the United Nations Environment Program, UNEP, says climate change will fuel an increase in wildfires in coming decades. The report says if preventative measures are not taken, the wildfires will damage environments, people's health, and economies. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, where the UNEP is headquartered.
The report released Wednesday by United Nations Environment Programme and Norwegian Environmental Group, Ajit Randal, says climate change and how people use land are expected to make wildfires more frequent and intense, with a global increase of 50% by 2100. The report was released ahead of the fifth session of the United Nations Environment Assembly to be held in Nairobi next week. Andrew Sullivan is a bushfire researcher at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization.
Most regions experience weather conditions that are conducive to the outbreak of a wildfire at some point in the year. Uncontrollable and devastating wildfires are becoming an expected part of the seasonal calendars in many parts of the world. The risk that wildfires pose to people and the environment is changing due to numerous factors, including but not limited to climate change. Other factors include land use changes and demographic changes.
Research analysis shows the risk of wildfires has become more frequent in some areas, and there is more risk in areas that have been unaffected by fires. A recent study published in the medical journal The Lancet said more than 30,000 people in 43 countries have died due to exposure to wildfire smoke. 50 researchers worldwide said fires are made worse by climate change through increased drought, high air temperatures, low humidity, lightning and strong winds. Glynis Humphrey of the Plant Conservation Unit at the University of Cape Town says fire affects UN development goals intended to reduce poverty, improve health and spur economic development.
It affects food systems. If a large fire wipes out crops, or it impacts on an urban area, it still affects food resources. And typically, it impacts the poorest of the poor. Fire interacts closely with climate in terms of carbon emissions and rainfall patterns. And it impacts human and ecosystem health. And it impacts people's jobs and the economic situation that people find them in. So it's essential that fire is actually incorporated and acknowledged within the Sustainable Development Goals and put on the agenda.
Sullivan says the world needs to learn to manage and mitigate the risk of wildfires.
Eliminating the risk of wildfires is not possible, but much can be done to manage and reduce the risks that they pose. When it comes to fighting wildfires, we know that technology has very clear limitations, particularly when the wildfire behaviour is extreme. Managing the available fuel before a wildfire breaks out through planned, as it's prescribed, or hazard reduction burning, or other hazard mitigation actions can reduce the intensity and thus the likely impact of a wildfire. Fuel management will increase the window of effectiveness of suppression actions and also increase firefighter safety.
Environmental experts are calling for the use of data and science-based monitoring systems with indigenous knowledge to achieve robust regional and international cooperation. The report also calls for international safety standards and asks countries to work on policies and laws that encourage good land and fire use. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America. Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's Premier Men's Basketball League to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 0905 and 2005.